This podcast is for alcoholics that have a willingness to recover from their alcoholism by being taught and practicing the principles of the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book and the 12 and 12 of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ilya, and I am an alcoholic. Page XIII, forward to first edition, first paragraph. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. Page 89 of the Big Book, Chapter 7, Working with Others, first full paragraph. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. So remember, we have three parts to the 12th step. Now we're on working with others in the Big Book. The part of the step that tells us to try to carry this message to alcoholics. In the last podcast, we covered practicing these principles in all our affairs. And lastly, we will discuss having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So in order to have the full awakening, we need to also carry this message that was so freely given to us to newcomers. And what better person to do that than somebody who understands and has experienced the steps before carrying this message? That is a must. There is and are other ways to help alcoholics if you're new and you don't understand the message. But to carry a message that you don't understand or haven't experienced for yourself is kind of like the blind leading the blind. I wouldn't want a person teaching me how to fly a plane that doesn't understand how planes work and hasn't experienced flying themselves. So it's literally the same thing. But we get to AA and we're eager to jump right to the end and help others. And that will give us immunity from drinking. Well, it is true that immunity from drinking does come when you carry this message. But you still need to work the other steps. Otherwise, you will not get long-term sobriety. And there are other ways to help alcoholics if you don't understand this program. Give them a ride to a meeting. Show them where another meeting is. If they haven't tried, you know, other meetings, there may be different meetings that they could experience that you know about. There are lots of ways that you can contribute to the helpfulness of the group. You can pour the coffee. You can straighten the chairs out. You can set up the room. There are many things you can do to help alcoholics while you learn this program. But carrying a message you don't understand is not one of them. So in any case, let's discuss what we should do when we understand this program. So let's turn to page 91. Bill outlines exactly the process on how to help a recovered a recovering alcoholic who has no idea what AA is or that there's a solution. So if you turn to page 91, we're going to go to the third full paragraph, and we're going to read that. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. So that's the first thing we do. There's going to be five steps to carrying this message. So that's the first one. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. So that means just have some small talk. You don't need to jump right into the devastating weakness and that they're doomed if they don't listen to you. There is a way to build some rapport, is what I like to call it. And so build a little rapport with the person. Don't scare them off by coming in there and telling them that you're going to straighten them out. That's the first thing that will make an alcoholic run. So keep the conversation light at first. Get to know each other. Secondly, after a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. So that's the second thing. So kind of gear the conversation towards to talk about some phase of his drinking or your drinking. Talk about, you know, a little bit about the way you used to drink. Try to help the alcoholic identify with you in relation to alcohol. It can still be a light discussion. Talk about, I don't know, your when you first drank in high school or when you first picked up and what it did to you and go from there. The next thing, tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. So you blend that right into what I just said. Two and three, talk about the drinking phase, and then you talk about how you drank, your symptoms, your experiences, and hopefully the person you're trying to sponsor will help you, will contribute some of their experiences and identify. And then the next sentence says, if he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he wishes to talk, it means you don't make him talk. They may want to explain their problems to you later, maybe not in the first meeting. So it's up to him or her whether or not they want to get into their story. If they don't, then they don't. But if they do, listen, because you can't understand if you don't listen. It says to get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. Is only going to be understood by the story that they tell you. And now if he says in the next sentence, if he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. So if he's not going to or she's not going to talk, go back to a sketch of your drinking career, walk them through, you know, give them your history of how you started, why you drank, what it did for you, what it did to you, and go through the progression of your disease and up into the time you decided that you had enough. And but don't go into how that was accomplished, because the solution isn't what is supposed to be presented as of yet. Right now, you're going to discuss the problem and identify with this person. And then so that's the fifth thing you do. And then it continues, if he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquors has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. So if he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor just caused you. You know, oh, wow, it really brought me to my knees. I wanted to die. I lost my wife, I lost my kids, I lost my house, all the things that happened to you internally and externally that the troubles have caused you. If he's, you know, but don't moralize or lecture the individual. And if they're in a lighthearted mood, and tell funny stories. You know, whatever it takes to build rapport with the individual. And that's the first thing that you should be doing when you're having a conversation with the newcomer, and they've asked you for your help. And if they haven't asked for your help and you have this conversation with somebody out in the parking lot after a meeting, maybe after that they'll ask you for help. So, you know, there's a lot of ways you can help an alcoholic before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. And if somebody reaches out for help, then, you know, we're responsible to help them, just as others have helped us. So that is really why we're going to meetings, is to see what we can give to the meeting rather than take from it at this point. So moving on, we're going to jump to page 92 and go to the first full paragraph. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. So now we want to, you know, get into a little bit about the disease. The malady is a disease. So it's a hopeless disease if you're convinced he's a real alcoholic. Now, that's the first thing you have to decide. If you, you know, there are people who come to AA who have drank over an external disaster in their life, and it became a habit, and they needed to get a hold of their drinking problem. Now, there's a difference between having a drinking problem and being a real alcoholic. We discussed what the difference was in More About Alcoholism. So if you go back to More About Alcoholism, read the sentences about the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real alcoholic. Now, Bill is making it clear that this book and this program is designed for the real alcoholic. This program does not exist for the hard drinker. A hard drinker who comes to AA and realizes that he's not a real alcoholic will not need this program to recover from whatever it is they were drinking over. See, hard drinkers drink over something. Real alcoholics drink because they're trying to fill a void inside them. Okay, there's a big difference. And so if a hard drinker comes here and doesn't want to work this program, it's because they don't have a life or death disease. And it's a waste of time to try to teach them a program that they don't need to practice in order to live. There are other programs for hard drinkers. And so this program is designed for the real alcoholics. So that's the first thing that we have to be satisfied about. And once we do are satisfied that he or she is one of us, meaning a real alcoholic, then we can begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of this disease. So where did we learn about the hopeless feature of this disease? Well, let's go to page 18 of There Is a Solution and revisit that. So we're going to read the first paragraph on page 18 of the Big Book. An illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it is an illness, involves those about us in a way or other human sickness can. Involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. So that's the kind of illness we're talking about here. And he equates it to cancer. Okay, we have a formless cancer, and I've said that in the last podcasts. If you need a reminder of this disease, go back to step one. Because we have a formless cancer, and you either have it or you don't. So teaching this program or giving treatment to, let's say, a cancer patient who doesn't have cancer but has the symptoms of cancer is a waste of time. If you need to diagnose that this is a real alcoholic through identification, and that's why we read in the first paragraph when I first started this podcast what the steps are to build rapport and to identify so we can be satisfied that this person has this formless spiritual disease, malady, or illness, or whatever other word you want to use to describe it or to call it. Okay, so let's continue on page 18, a second paragraph now. We hope this volume will inform and comfort those who may be affected. There are many. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrists and the doctor. But the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. And that's in italics from the word but to accomplished. All right, and that means that unless one alcoholic is identifying with another, there's no to little understanding, and nothing can really be accomplished. We have to understand that we have a unique ability to help another alcoholic when even a doctor, a psychiatrist, a wives, parents, intimate friends cannot. And that's hugely important. It makes you a unique individual in that regard. So we're not unique as far as this disease is concerned, but when you do have this disease, you are unique compared to somebody who does not, and therefore have the ability to carry this message and help them like no other non-alcoholic can. And that's why we have to understand if this person's a real alcoholic or not. Otherwise, if they're not, they can go to their parents or psychiatrists or wives or intimate friends and get help over their hard drinking and whatever it is they were drinking over. They don't have this spiritual cancer, as Bill equates it to. Okay, continuing at the bottom of page 18, last paragraph. That the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about. That his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer, that he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful, that there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. So the sponsor is not coming across as somebody who is preaching. Holier than thou is preaching. And we come across to be helpful sincerely because we know that others were helpful for us when we were in the same shoes as the sponsee. And there is no fees or dues or taxes or axes to grind or lectures about this thing. Yes, you need to listen if you're new. You will be lectured about how the steps work if you're interested in learning the program. You have to listen. But as far as you know, it being force fed down your throat, these are things that alcoholics will run from. And they're ineffective approaches. So we are, again, in a position to where we can sincerely give this message away because we know that it works through experience. And we have the answer outlined in this book, and we can explain it and help those alcoholics identify with the problem better than any other person can that doesn't have the problem. And what's the problem? The problem is they have the disease of chronic alcoholism. That's the problem, as it's described in the first step. So if you notice that this podcast doesn't have any advertisements, I think the company I use says that I can collect donations, but if you were to donate, all of that money would go straight to the General Services in New York. And I wouldn't keep a single penny of any of that contribution. And if anything, I just recommend that you just send it to New York directly, if you don't believe me. But there is no advertisements on this podcast, and I'm not collecting a single dime as a result of it. I don't care how many people listen in, and I probably will never know who is benefiting from it. Maybe people's lives are changing. Maybe they're not. The whole point is to expect nothing in return. And then how do I know that? Well, now we have to go to the 12 and 12, because step 12 is also in the 12 and 12. We read the parts about practicing these principles, but if I'm not carrying this message for free, then I'm not living to the principle of giving away this message that the book is telling me to. So let's go to page 109 and go to the bottom. Okay. Let's look at the last paragraph. Even the newest of newcomers finds undreamed rewards as he tries to help his brother alcoholic, the one who is even blinder than he. This is indeed the kind of giving that actually demands nothing. He does not expect his brother sufferer to pay him or even to love him. And then he discovers that by the divine paradox of this kind of giving, he has found his own reward, whether his brother has yet received anything or not. His own character may still be gravely defective, but he somehow knows that God has enabled him to make a mighty beginning, and he senses that he stands at the edge of new mysteries, joys, and experiences of which he has never even dreamed. So what I have written in the margin there is unconditionally. Giving love unconditionally. And the line that I have underlined is, and then he discovers that by the divine paradox of this kind of giving, he has found his own reward, whether his brother has yet received anything or not. So by giving this message away, I am receiving a reward from my higher power. I find my own reward through the joy of living, through my higher power. Whether you receive this message or don't receive this message does not make a difference to the carrier. Yes, would I love to see an alcoholic recover and have a life that they otherwise wouldn't have if they didn't know this program and begin to practice it? Absolutely. I don't think that there's any better feeling on earth than seeing somebody start to get this program and their eyes light up, that there's actual hope, and they realize that the disease can be arrested on a daily basis if they understand the program. They understand that because they're starting to experience some of the fruits of it. But as far as me goes, as a carrier of this message, I need to carry this message to stay sober myself. So why do I do it on a podcast? Well, like I said in earlier podcasts, the message can be spread far and wide now with the internet. If the great reality is that we can now carry this message to all the world through a laptop and a Wi-Fi connection and a microphone, then let's do it. Let's get it out there. My communication is open. There's an email here. If you want to write me, you can write me. Ask me questions. I have no problem with that. I'm not hiding. But, if there aren't any people who write me, maybe they're still practicing this, or they're taking this information to their live sponsor, their local sponsor, and realizing that that there is a program that they may not be working with that person, and then find somebody else because they realize that that sponsor isn't working the program. So I just helped that newcomer not get let off of a pier. Let's not forget that there are leaders in this world and who have existed that have killed people listening to their message. Okay. Not all messages, even if the person has charisma, are correct. Let's just, for historical purposes, Hitler wasn't teaching a very inclusive message, and millions of people died and countries were left in ruin. But hey, millions of people followed him nonetheless. It doesn't make them right. So there's a lot of charismatic people out there, especially alcoholics. And when I say the seriousness of this message being precise in the foreword of every podcast, Bill nor myself are kidding. It had to be precise for me because I had individuals who tried to teach me this program their way or manipulate it into a different program, taking what they liked and not focusing on the directions, take what you like and leave the rest. And that's not true. Taking what I like and leaving the rest does not make the program successful, and short-term sobriety is the most that I get out of that. So let's not fool ourselves into thinking that just because a charismatic or likable person is speaking, they better be able to back up their statements in this book. And if they're not, at least now you can. And that's okay. They may not back it up because they're sick and they don't know the difference, but you can now back it up. So hopefully this podcast will help you at least understand that. And then you can decide whether or not your local sponsor is a good fit for your recovery or not. Whether you like them or not is besides the point. In my experience, I had to I let go of my first sponsor because we went as far as we could together. They were very inspirational. They helped me tremendously. I owe them my life for where I was at the time, and I love them very much. But the truth is, after a few months, I found another sponsor who was teaching this program out of the books, literally out of the books, and explaining it like I'm explaining it, and even better than I did. It was an in-person, like I had said in my last podcast, an in-person classroom setting, so we could all learn together what this man had to offer as a carrier of this message. And he tied the program together beautifully, as written in these two books. And I completely understand all 12 steps. That doesn't mean I practice them perfectly, but I know when I'm not practicing them. And that's what's most important. I choose to whether I can practice them or not, not because I don't understand them. I can't claim I don't know any better anymore. And when I didn't know any better, it wasn't my fault. But when I know better, it is my fault if I choose not to live this way of life for the day or for the week or for however long I choose to endure the suffering of my disease when I don't have to. So that is really, really important to understand whether you're a newcomer or whether you're a carrier of this message. So now we are going to go back to the big book. Okay, we read the first full paragraph about the disease, that it is a real alcoholic we're dealing with, and then we went to there as a solution. So now we need to, we explained that we need to show him for our own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. So we understand that the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink. So we learned that about where? We learned that in There Is a Solution. Okay, we learned that on page 23, the first full paragraph, it says, therefore, the main problem of the chronic, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. So that's the queer obsession before the first drink. We know we have a physical allergy when we have that first drink, and then all bets are off and we crave more physically. But that queer mental condition is why we have this program. It keeps us away from the first drink because it's the first drink that that puts us right back into the physical side of the illness. So willpower doesn't work in of itself. Surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. So we don't have our own willpower to help us, to prevent us, I should say, from having that first drink. And that is really going to take a long, long time for the alcoholic to understand. So we read all of the other things that I've listened, that I've explained in the other podcasts about intellectual knowledge not being enough. So what are we to do? Let's continue. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. So that's very important. We cannot point our finger at another person and say, you are an alcoholic. I know you are. Even if you know, you still shouldn't do that. We cannot brand other people or label other people. They have to draw that conclusion on their own. That's a big part of the first step. They need to admit they're alcoholic. It doesn't say you admit that they're that other people are alcoholic. This is a discovery that they have to make on their own, and you're simply leading them down that path. If that person still thinks that they can control their drinking, then say maybe you can. You don't know. Maybe they can. You're not God. You're not a prophet. You're not a fortune teller. Maybe they can. And if they're not too alcoholic, you know, you can throw that in. But but insist that, hey, you know, if you are severely afflicted, just so you know, there may be little chance that you can recover on your own. So you want to throw that out there too. But the whole point is for them to decide that on their own, not for you to force it upon them. So again, you know, now he's getting into the slowly leading the alcoholic down that path, that this is a mental illness, just as much as it is a physical one, and willpower didn't work for you. And then, you know, you don't want to shove this book down their throat. You don't want to do anything like that yet. You just want to kind of, you know, very easily handle them because they're interested, but they haven't given you a decision yet. So all you can do is just generate some interest out of the individual. So we're going to continue. Third full paragraph on 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. So remember, we already went over that just now. We talked about it in There Is a Solution, in More About Alcoholism, Step 1, and I just read it again. So this is extremely important. You know, Bill used to go around trying to cure alcoholics when he had his spiritual experience, and he didn't cure a single one. He went to hundreds of bars and spoke to thousands of people, and not a single one was interested in what he had to offer or had to say. And then he went back to Silkworth and explained that, Dr. Silkworth, the chief medical doctor at that institution, in the doctor's opinion. And he said, you're going about this thing all wrong. They've got to understand that they're hopeless first, that they have an illness, a fatal malady. fatal means deadly. You can't coddle these guys into believing that it's just a simple matter of not being able to drink safely. They're sick in a physical and a mental capacity. And if they don't understand their disease, they're not going to do anything that this book says. And so it says here next in the next sentence, talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is an alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it empathetic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he is willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he lived by spiritual principles. So now we know that this person that you've built rapport with is starting to understand that he has a disease. And in fact, when I realized I had and believed that I had a disease based on the evidence and the description of it in this book, I was actually relieved because I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. I thought I was just a unique case, and I was, you know, never going to recover, and I didn't even know that I could. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I'll leave it at that. And so, you know, I saw doctors and psychiatrists and whatnot, but they didn't diagnose me as alcoholic. But in any event, you know, I certainly had a great relief when this disease was explained to me in detail. And so when I knew that I had these traits, I was more willing to discuss them with my sponsor. And at that point, you know, I was interested, well, how did you do this? If that's the problem and there's, you know, no way that willpower will solve it, how did you do this? And that's when my sponsor started to discuss the spiritual aspect of the program. And at first I was like, man, you know, that's tough. I've tried religion. But we talked about that in step two in the big book and the 12 and 12. So I revert you back to those podcasts. If you're listening from here. But the program is a spiritual program. So it's now telling us to stress the spiritual feature freely. And that he doesn't have to, or she doesn't have to agree with your conception of God. They can choose whatever one they like. And that the main thing is it has to be a power greater than himself. And if you're brand new, there was a podcast where I talked about you can make an external object your higher power if you need to in the beginning. It doesn't matter as long as it's not you, not your ego. It will grow from there. It has to. But it has to be, there has to be a beginning. And the most stubborn of egos may only be able to make an object their higher power, like a chair or a doorknob or whatever. It sounds ridiculous, but it's really not when you're that stubborn and egotistical and you're so used to doing everything yourself. You can't imagine how a drinking problem is anything more than just a matter of not putting it in your body, because it's so much bigger than that. And the newcomer doesn't understand that yet. So they just need to be a little bit open to the idea of a spiritual solution as opposed to a solution of willpower. And that's important. So now you're leading him into step two. So he does warn us on how to do that. On page 93, first full paragraph, it says, when dealing with this such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There's no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. So it's easy to have our own convictions, and if you start using the word even God, they're going to have an idea of what that word means. It's kind of like love. You know, everyone has their own idea of what love and God is, and it's not a good idea to use such an open-ended adjective or noun to describe what in their mind may be an external deity or one that doesn't exist at all that's punishing. So let's not arouse any prejudice. Let's just keep it simple. Use simple words. Spiritual is always a better word. But, you know, God is all over this book. As we know, we already talked about that in many other podcasts, and this being, you know, written in the 30s, and they did the best they could with what they knew and were taught. So we have to even consider that in 2019. Continuing, he talks about the religious versus the spiritual. And we've been over this as well in other podcasts. But when we're dealing with another newcomer, we have to remember that not everybody is a Christian. Not everyone's a Jew. Not everyone's a Muslim. Not everyone is an atheist. Not everyone's an agnostic. So whatever you are in your mind makes no difference. So the newcomer has to be able to feel welcome. That this program is an all-welcoming program to no matter what faith or belief system they have. So let's read what Bill says about that. Page 93, we're on the second full paragraph now. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education and training may be far superior to yours. In that case, he is going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows. But he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. So, yeah, they may be a priest, for all you know, and know everything about religion. But, hey, they're in AA, so obviously they're considering AA, I should say. So they're obviously curious because their own religion isn't working. Continuing, he may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. And I have that underlined. Faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. And that is really the 12 steps that we're talking about. So continuing, let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do. But call to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice the very precepts he knows so well. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. And I've read that sentence in many, many other podcasts. For those who believe that this is a particularly a Christian program. Even the Christian himself is saying that it's not. In that very sentence, buried at the bottom of 93 into 94. And then also in the AA preamble, it says we represent no particular faith denomination. So, you know, I mean, it's right there in black and white by the author himself. You want to change the program. And you're taking a newcomer into 12 steps for Jesus Christ, then tell them that. At least give them the option to see that it doesn't work. But that being said, I'm not teaching 12 steps for Jesus Christ. I'm teaching 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what it says in the book. So the newcomer should have that chance, too, to understand that. So now we continue. outlining the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. So it's important that there's an outline how you did this. So you're introducing the steps now. Continuing, it is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain that he is under no obligation to you, that you hope that only he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he need see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. So, don't be offended if he hauls ass. Most of the people that I've tried to carry this message to are gone. Not everybody wants to do this or is ready to do it. It says here, the more hopeless they feel, the better. So hopelessness is an emotional bottom. And we know that you have to hit that emotional bottom before you are sincerely going to try this program as an inside job rather than just trying to get your stuff back, which other alcoholics who've lost their wives, their kids, their house do. They get their stuff back, and then they lose it again, or they go back to drinking and die. Or they just commit suicide sober, or dry, I should say. So there is an importance of understanding that you can't rush someone's hopelessness. All you can do is know that you tried your best to help another alcoholic stay sober and carry this message and go from there. You know, there's an important word in the 12th step off the wall. The word tried. Okay? Tried means you have taken the time to put effort, work, and action into it. Doesn't mean that the outcome is going to be to your liking. If you think that you are carrying this message for an outcome, you are in more danger of drinking than the newcomer, or just as much in danger. So it is very important that each word in this book, especially off the wall, is taken seriously. You know, like praying only for knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out in 11, that word only is important. Tried to carry this message, tried is important. So don't skip words. And that's what he's saying here. All you did was try. Continuing, 94. Your candidate may give reasons why he not follow all of the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him a copy of this book. So that's when you give him the book and tell him about that there's a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, again, this was in the 1930s. They may not have even known there was a book or let alone a fellowship. But, you know, still, this still applies. You know, if you have someone who's interested, you may have probably met them at a meeting, but they still may not understand what Alcoholics Anonymous is or that this book even exists. And the truth is, if they're not willing to, at that point, even read a book, you really think they're going to be willing enough to work the steps and listen to you? You know, when this book was brought to my attention, I read it because I wanted to understand what was wrong with me. I can't force somebody to read a book. A book seems like an easy enough thing to do. If I can't do that simple thing, then what do I really think that I'm going to be able to teach him anything or her anything? No. Well, for me, I try to stick with the women. Excuse me. I think the women should stick with the women and the men should stick with the men. I misspoke. I'm not going to rewind, but that certainly is a good thing if you're, depending upon, I guess, sexual orientation too. The point is, you don't want to be sexually attracted to who you're trying to teach because your ambitions get in the way of carrying the message. That's the reason. So, in any event, so we need to go to another paragraph here. But I've just kind of drew a blank. Let's go to page 96. Okay, 96. Second full paragraph. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. So now, he had the book. He read the book. He's called you back. And he said he wants to learn this program or go through with the steps. So that's great. You've intrigued him enough, and you're available to help him if he wants to. Otherwise, he may consult someone else. Don't be offended. Remember, this is all God's will, is who he picks and how he picks an individual is not up to you. You may feel offended because you took the time to meet with him, and you may feel like he owes you, but you need to do an inventory on that. What's your motive? The whole point is for them to recover. If their ego is too large, then it needs a big, it needs to be wounded a little more. He needs to go through a little more suffering. You can't make him do that. You can't propel his own suffering. But if he decides that he suffered enough, but he has intuition that he may be getting better help from someone else, then that's his choice to make. All right, so now let's say he picks you, okay? So now you got to understand that it's important that the sponsor is capable of being in their ego and enabling an alcoholic. So you don't want to enable a sponsee if you're a sponsor. So he talks about, the sponsee asking the sponsor for money, for a whole place to live, financial assistance, etc. You don't want to give him too much if they're manipulating you. Now, each situation is different. I'm not going to say that you should never, ever, ever help a sponsee materially. But for the most time, it says here, use your own discretion. And I'm going to let you read this next one. But be careful that they're not manipulating you because they're master manipulators. They're still, remember, fresh newcomers. And all they know how to do is manipulate or people please. So it's important to understand that. And then he gets into this whole thing about, if they were in your home and they're new. And they destroy your house, all that. Obviously, this is the 1930s, and there were no detoxes back then. So you have to take it in context with when this example on page 97 was written. So understand that there's detoxes now, 30-day detoxes, and this is where a newcomer may need to go at first to clean out their system. And if you're not going to put them in your home if they're withdrawing and going through DTs. You're probably going to help them get into a detox center. And so that's, 1097 is explaining that. So you just have to keep it in context with today's resources versus the resources they had in the 1930s was all they had was their homes. So we want to continue to explain that the alcoholic, if you look on page 98, It says, the only condition, I'm sorry, the second full paragraph says, burn into the idea, into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone, the only condition that he trusts in God and clean house. So that is really what the alcoholic has to understand, is that this is a spiritual program. Trust in your spiritual, your God, and clean house. If they're not willing to do those two things, they're not willing to work this program, because that is what this program is, besides carrying this message, is cleaning house and trusting in your higher power. And if you think that you can hide the alcoholic from the outside world, you may be endangering them as well. There's another important paragraph on page 101. If you look at the second full paragraph, it states, in our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. So it's just like putting someone under house arrest. I mean, it's not a spiritual approach, is what I have written in the margin. You know, so if you don't trust God or take a spiritual approach and just lock somebody up in a house and take them away from society or any temptation at all, they may not drink for a while, but when they're ready to drink, man, it says a bigger explosion than ever. They go out big. And it's been tried before, and it doesn't work. It says it's impossible and have always failed. So remember that not having a spiritual approach is not this program, nor a solution to this disease. So if you're thinking that's all I have to do is take away temptation, and they'll be fine, that may or may not work. That will not work in the long run. It may work in the short run. I certainly have had the, just from my own experience, I've been, you know, when I was new, I think living in a safe environment with little temptation is obviously important, but you can't shield that from the alcoholic for the rest of their life, is what it's trying to say. Eventually, they're going to have to accept that the world drinks. There's beer ads, there's bars, there's places that serve alcohol, and not doing a spiritual program isn't going to protect the alcoholic from temptation in the long haul. And then he talks about, you know, well, what about going to nightclubs and parties and dance receptions? Well, if you're working a spiritual program, you're going to have no temptation to drink. That's the whole point, is to be able to live life in the real world and not be tempted. Know you're an alcoholic. Know your higher power is always with you, keeps you away from a drink, and you can go to these places if you've got business there or a personal reason to go besides, you know, vicariously living through other alcoholics. You don't want to go if you're vicariously watching others drink. Well, you can't. That is a sure way of caving. But there are, you know, places that alcohol will be served for the rest of your life. And to shield yourself from them or hiding in the rooms in AA is not a long-term solution. My sponsor used to say, yeah, there's people who go to meetings all the time and they're called prisoners to the rooms. They can't function in society unless they're in an AA meeting. Well, that's a prisoner. They've been institutionalized in AA, literally. And that is not what this program does not want to institutionalize you. And strangely enough, the more you practice it, you don't need to go to as many meetings, and you're still sober, and you're still living the joy of, you're still living a joyous life. The only times that you would want to go to a meeting is for fellowship and to carry this message to find a new, to find a newcomer to help, not because if you don't go to a meeting today, you're going to drink. That is not the intention of this program, nor the directions of this book. So, that's really what we're trying to do is continue. I mean, imagine if we didn't carry this message. Maybe the first 100 or a few people after them would have got sober, then the program would have been dissolved, and this would have been, you know, some secret message on some bookshelf somewhere where no one teaches or practices it or carries it. Then it would be just words on a page. But these words come to life when we explain them to another alcoholic, and we explain our own experience, strength, and hope. And our experience is our story before and after drinking, and before and after our recovery. You know, I can still be in my disease after drinking. So before and after doesn't mean that, you know, before and after what? Doesn't say after drinking. Before and after is the fact that I have a life before recovery and a life after recovery. And recovery doesn't mean abstinence. I can be unrecovered and abstinent from alcohol and still in my disease. So I want to show, as a living example of my experience and where my strength comes from next, is my strength from a higher power. Others have helped me find my higher power. It's that simple. I love others for helping me. I'm considerate of others, but they are not my higher power. My strength comes from my higher power. Without others, I may not have found my higher power. I will absolutely admit that I did not do it alone. But in the last analysis, it is only within me that it was found, not within you. I couldn't borrow your higher power for life, let alone at all, really. When you say, you know, borrow my higher power, I take that as you're offering me your help. And that's fine. I can't do this alone. If you're practicing and teaching this program, then I'm going to stick with the winners. You know, there's an expression called big book thumpers. And it's not, you know, it's like a preacher banging the Bible on the pulpit. I'm not doing that. There may be some times where I have tough love and opinions that I'm passionate about. And I have to work on, you know, some of my opinions being more judgmental than opinions. But at least I know and I'm aware. So I have something to work on. But never said I was ever practicing these principles perfectly, and neither does the book. But I certainly have the ability to carry this message as a winner, meaning somebody who's recovered. Big book winner is someone who's recovered and beaten this disease. I haven't killed the disease because it's not curable, but it is arrestable. And the more I practice it, my default position changes to other-centeredness, and then ultimately God-centeredness. And to me, that's a winner. If I can carry this message with a tranquil mind and not let a diseased person try to convince me that I'm wrong about this program and they're right, well, you know, I actually thank miserable dry drunks for staying miserable only because it proves that the program works. So those who still suffer, I even thank them, because it shows that I'm not delusional in my thinking, nor is Bill with this program and the first 100 that helped create Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book. So, and all the millions that followed after that thoroughly followed their path and that are on the broad highway. If you don't want to be a part of that, that's okay. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to stop carrying this message because you don't want to practice it. So thirdly is hope. You know, recovered alcoholics are an example of hope that this really works. If you've seen or heard about their prior lifestyle and what they were like in their disease and the steps and the process of that working and showing a living example of who and what they are now, followed by a sincere attempt of what they could be, which is now what they could be, is hope that it can happen for you too. And it will happen if you work the program. There are very few guarantees in AA, and there is only really one that if you work this program, you'll recover. Even if you have a dual illness, you know, let's say you have alcoholism and depression. Well, working these steps will give you the knowledge that you need to treat your depression too. And maybe you'll make good choices and decisions to find a psychiatrist who will give you the correct medicine to treat your depression instead of you telling the psychiatrist to give you a bunch of Valiums and other mood and emotional altering drugs to cope with your depression. Maybe that you will learn how to deal with all conditions, even if you have another one outside of your drinking. So that's why these steps are a framework to accepting who and what your situation is in this world. And for me, I had to uncover that I also had depression. Even Bill did. But Bill's day, they didn't have a lot of the drugs that treat depression. And so this book doesn't say that we're not supposed to abstain from treating other illnesses if, in fact, the steps lead us to discovering that we're also bipolar or suffer from a multiple amount of other illnesses in conjunction with being a chronic alcoholic. So even in that case, you can say the program worked because I was trying to treat one disease thinking that my spiritual malady was one and the same. Not so. The steps revealed that for me. So for those people who are out there who feel like it's hopeless because they are also diagnosed with other illnesses besides alcoholism, just remember you're self-medicating one disease with another. And that can seem devastating. So even in those situations, I can be an example of hope because I am also one of those people. And I have to endure both diseases and accept this solution in order to treat my other illness. Otherwise, it makes no difference. I will ultimately become suicidal and potentially drink again before that. But I can assure you that I am happy most of the time. I am joyous most of the time. And when I do go back into my disease or take my will back, I can exit from my disease very, very quickly now, if not the same day. At times, it used to take a week or two, but now I don't let it fester that long, and I'm able to do that. I have people that I can call if I need to do a fifth step, if I'm in a real pickle, and I am an emotional wreck, and I don't know why. But for the most part, the little things that used to really eat at me, and I didn't know why, I no longer need to make a phone call to do that. That is not something that I recommend to someone who's new. I think if you're new in the first 3 years, at least, you should always be calling in constant contact with your sponsor. But as time goes on, when you start practicing this, you'll start to see that attachment to any human being or dependence, over dependence, or overly controlling another human being is the disease. So we need to find balance when it comes to codependency. And a sponsor's role is to teach and carry this message and to help with fifth steps and ninth steps and early emotional turmoil. And after that, this sponsor is not your father, it's not your mother, it's not your life coach. They've done their job. And they have a life too. And to depend upon them forever is not going to work because they're going to die one day or move on. And you'll know whether or not you have a higher power or not when that day comes. And any sponsor who expects you to be their subordinate for the rest of your life is playing God. So you want to make sure that you understand their role and your role is to learn this message and ultimately make your higher power your sponsor. And when you do a 10th step, there will be times where you may need to call them, but it won't be an overly dependence on them. And that's really important because, again, this is a spiritual program, not a my sponsor is my God program. So let's read the last paragraph on 103, which is the last page of Working with Others. It says, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. So that is really the point of the message. Bottles are only a symbol. Drinking was nothing but a symptom. We've got to stop fighting everything and everyone. And so we do it together. We do it together, but our higher powers are ultimately our all-knowing, all-powerful, and our creative guides. So that is it for Working with Others. There's a lot more you can read in the chapter, and then a little bit more in the 12 and 12. I covered the basics. And next time we'll read about the spiritual awakening in a vision for you. And then I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your day, and God bless you all. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.